Syrian president is set to address the Arab League summit in Saudi Arabia after more than 12 years. Activists protest against the G7 summit in the Japanese city of Hiroshima. Also coming up, North Korea slams the US and the South for their joint military drills, promising to respond to what it calls warmongers' madness. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad is in Saudi Arabia to attend the Arab League summit after more than 12 years. The summit is set to take place in the Saudi port city of Jeddah later in the day. The Syrian president arrived there on Thursday at the official invitation of the Saudi king. The Arab League decided to readmit Syria earlier this month, and that followed normalization of ties between Syria and Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia and the UAE. The Pan-Arab organization suspended Syria's membership in 2011 when the country was gripped by war that saw foreign-backed militants take parts of Syria. Now the country's return to the Arab fold comes after the government regained control of most of those areas. Joining us for this special coverage is Brecht Jonkers, historian and journalist from Hasselt, Belgium, and also John Bosner, journalist and activist and political analyst from Belgrade, Serbia. Gentlemen, welcome. Brecht, if I can start with you. Many Arab countries that kept their ties with Syria after its suspension say that it was foreign powers, the United States in particular, that forced the decision to suspend Damascus from the Arab League. In your opinion, in 2011, not today, in 2011, was that move made by the Arab League or from pressure under Washington, from Washington?
I think there was definitely the pressure from abroad, the pressure from the United States and from the West in general, that really made the majority almost of the Arab League countries buckle under this pressure and decide to turn against Syria. Because most of these countries prior to the 2011-2012 unrest and the conflict in Syria had no real fundamental issue or fundamental conflict with the Syrian Arab Republic. Of course, there had been periods in which there were sort of disagreements between Syria and, for example, Saudi Arabia, but those conflicts usually dated back to the 1970s. So this is not exactly something that that really benefited Riyadh or Abu Dhabi or anyone really in the Arab world to cut relations with Syria and to call for the overthrow of the country, the overthrow of the government. This includes, for example, even countries that at this moment are still not are still unwilling to restore relations with Syria, such as Qatar. A country like Qatar, which is a backer of the Muslim Brotherhood and a supporter of, for example, Hamas in Palestine, also doesn't really have a benefit in destroying Syria, considering the fact that Syria is a major backer, next to Iran, of course, of the Palestinian cause, including a major backer of Hamas. So when you look at all these things together and take into account that back then in 2011, it's not that long ago, but we're talking about a completely different world. This was a world that was still very much a unipolar world, a world that was very much dominated by U.S. hegemony, and in time in which the U.S. could dictate very easily, this is the time of the Obama administration, they could dictate very easily to weaker countries that are considered to be in the orbit of the United States, that are considered to be quote-unquote allies of the United States. It was very easy for the White House to dictate their geopolitical agenda. And this is not to say that they don't bear responsibility. Of course, I believe from a moral perspective, the decision by the Arab League to suspend Syria is definitely unjustifiable, was an immoral decision, and was basically a sign of cowardice on behalf of many of these Arab leaders. But fundamentally, the decision was made not in Riyadh and not in Abu Dhabi, but was made in Washington, D.C., and probably also in Tel Aviv.
John, how do you view the return of Damascus to the Arab League, where once upon a time some of its members were busy plotting against Syria and now are welcoming Syria back to the region or to the fold?
Well, I would start by saying I agree with each and every word of your previous guest, and I would suggest that this is a result of the determination of the Syrian people to stand up and defend themselves, and of the Syrian government to draw a line defending its own sovereignty. There is no doubt about it that this expulsion of Syria was the biggest own goal that the Arab League could have scored against itself. And I don't agree that they plotted this. This was obviously plotted in Washington and in London, and was just executed by semi-colonial Arab states. What we're seeing now, ideally, is the final end of the unipolar world with the reemergence of Russia as a world power, and at the same time, ideally, some real solidarity among Arab states to protect their own interests, not just against the Anglo-American Empire, but also against the intrigues of Israel in the region. So this is a major development, and we have to say that the guilt for the breakup of the League with Syria lays fully in London and in Washington.
Well, John, just on that last point, President Assad says today's summit in Saudi Arabia will enhance joint Arab action or achieve the aspirations of the Arab people. And, you know, how would you interpret that remark when we saw so much Western interference in the Arab world?
Well, I think that this is a bellwether sign that the world has really changed. It used to be that the United States, with its partners around the world, and I use the word partners loosely because really they're just economic and military colonies, but it used to be that they could decide in closed door meetings in London or in Washington what they were going to do with the affairs of any other state. And I have to say that President Assad is perhaps one of the most forgiving people that one could have ever found, after having been knifed in the back by the Arab League at a moment in which regime change operations were being run directly out of the White House to destroy his country, not just his own rule. So this is a very positive step, and one has to be amazed with the degree of openness on Assad's part to work together with the people who betrayed him before.
And then, Bracht, just getting back to you, we heard from those who were against Syria's suspension from the Arab League at the time that the aim of the move was to fracture the Arab and Islamic world in order to divert attention from the Palestinian cause and from the Israeli atrocities against the Palestinians. During Syria's absence from the Arab League, we saw the so-called normalization. On one hand, the so-called normalization deals between some Arab states with Israel. And on the other hand, there was some diminishing focus on the Palestinian cause in the Arab League. Do you think that will now be reversed?
Well, we can only hope, of course, that the emphasis on Palestine will once again be put there, will once again increase. And I think we have seen more and more it's a slight pull within the Arab world and within the wider Islamic world to re-emphasize the suffering of the Palestinians, and to re-emphasize, especially now recently with the anniversary of the Nakba, to re-emphasize the fact that that the concept of Israel, the Zionist entity, is purely and entirely a colonial enterprise and is occupied territory for the full 100% of its existence and full 100% of its territory. So the idea, indeed, that the turning against Syria, and prior to that, the turning of Arab opinion against, for example, Libya, that this is done partially to divert attention from the Palestinian cause, I think is definitely right. And it's not just diverting attention from Palestine, it's also diverting literal, immediate material assistance, because we know that Syria has been providing assistance for Palestine. This is humanitarian, this is financial, this is military assistance, just like Iran has given, just like in the past Libya has done, assistance given to the Palestinian resistance. And without, of course, this assistance, without weaponry, without funds to continue fighting against the hyper-modern military power that the Zionist entity is, of course, this has weakened the Palestinian cause. The very fact that the Palestinians are still fighting back in the way that they have been for the past 10 years is just purely a showcase of their heroism and their tenacity. But it has been extremely difficult.
Right.
This is all, in the end, this is all part, of course, of a wider agenda that has been already detailed back in 2001 under the George Bush administration. And right after the attacks of 9/11, that they said that they were planning to overthrow several Arab governments and Islamic governments in the span of 10 years. And we have now seen, we're more than 20 years later, that, of course, this U.S. plan has failed. But regardless, it has cost in millions and millions of innocent lives anyway.
John, we see and we read on Western mainstream media that Syria is coming out of isolation. Was Syria isolated? I mean, how can you be isolated when you have the Islamic Republic of Iran standing behind you, when you have Iraq, Yemen, Russia, Hezbollah, all these parties, movements, strong movements, organizations, Russia, for example?
And not only that, you have individuals like myself who have no connection to the region. I'm from Canada. I live now in Serbia. And there are people like me all around the world that have stood behind Syria publicly. So it's not just a question of state-to-state relationships. It's also a question of the open-minded and logical thinking people around the world in every country who have seen what happened here and who have seen how the Assad government defended their sovereignty and defended their territory. I think that we are seeing a groundswell shift in international politics, and I think that Syria, especially with the support of Iran and with other groups around the world, has proven that it is worth fighting even when you have to fight almost by yourself.
Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for your analysis. Brecht Jonkers is a historian and journalist. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us for our special coverage there on Syria and the Arab League. Moving on, lawyers of Iranian national Hamid Nouri, detained in Sweden, have once again questioned his trial process and criticized the way he's being treated in jail. Nouri's lawyers say he has been held in solitary confinement for more than 3 years now. They say that is too long and a world record. The lawyers say Nouri is prevented from visiting his family members, blaming prison authorities for refusing to arrange for the meetings. They have also slammed Swedish authorities for preventing Nouri's access to the documents crucial to defend him at the court. The lawyers brought up those issues at the 10th session of an appeals court hearing. Nouri was arrested upon arrival in Stockholm in November 2019. Swedish prosecutors accused him of being involved in the execution of members of Mujahideen Khalq organization. That's a terror group responsible for killing tens of thousands of civilians in Iran. Iran has rejected the accusations against Nouri as politically motivated. Leaders of the group of seven wealthy countries known as the G7 are meeting in Japan with the war in Ukraine a top issue for their talks. The meeting brings together the leaders from the US, Canada, the UK, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan. They are looking to tighten sanctions against Russia over the Ukraine war. Western officials have said the G7 wants to target Russia's lucrative diamond trade, among other measures. The planned sanctions follow Western restrictions already targeting Russian economy since the Ukraine war began in February last year. Moscow has adapted quickly to mitigate the effects of the sanctions, including diverting trade to countries like China. Russia accuses the West of hostility and failing to meet its security concerns. Now, in the Japanese city of Hiroshima, where the G7 summit is taking place, activists have come out on the streets to protest the meeting. the protesters marched through a main street in central Hiroshima, not far from the venue of the G7 summit. They chanted slogans, carrying placards with signs reading "No to nuclear war." The protesters say the G7 leaders are meeting to prepare for a nuclear war. They are particularly angry at the U.S. for being part of the summit. That's because the U.S. dropped nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and another Japanese city, Nagasaki, back in 1945. Up to 226,000 people, mostly civilians, were killed in the bombings. North Korea once again lashes out at the United States and South Korea for their joint military drills around the Korean Peninsula. Pyongyang accuses the two allies of ramping up what it calls nuclear blackmail. The North has pledged to respond accordingly to what it described as warmongers' madness. It says Seoul and Washington are seeking to crush the North militarily. That's why Pyongyang says it reserves the right to reinforce its self-defense by developing weapons programs. The U.S. and South Korea have stepped up their war games, including air and sea drills, since March. Pyongyang sees the maneuvers as a rehearsal for invasion. It usually responds to them by test-firing missiles, including intercontinental ballistic ones. The North has unveiled designs for new and smaller nuclear warheads. Earlier, our correspondent in Seoul, Jennifer Chang, joined me to talk about the ongoing tensions on the Korean Peninsula.
They want to somehow bring tactical nuclear weapons back here on a rotational basis. After all, when the South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol went for his state visit in Washington, D.C. with U.S. President Biden recently, he clinched an agreement for the U.S. nuclear submarine to come here on a regular basis, and this is armed with nuclear missiles. So this is a big threat against North Korea, and the North is determined not to back down. It is now preparing to launch its first ever spy satellite into space. Many experts say that will take place in July. And of course, it has already successfully tested a solid propellant ICBM capable of eluding all U.S. missile defenses and nuking the U.S. mainland. So this means that it is really a tit for tat at this point. Neither side is willing to back down, and tensions are just escalating.
That wraps up World News for this hour. Thank you for joining us.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran
via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Nothing quite equals the feeling a book lover gets from being surrounded by books. The variety of titles, the smell of ink on paper, and the gathering of fellow bibliophiles in one place can be just exhilarating. That's why there are book fairs where you can enjoy acquiring new books, meeting authors, and attending different book-related events. A book fair is a happy meeting ground for writers, readers, and book lovers, where they all come together to celebrate the written and published words. It offers a terrific opportunity to discover new writers while acknowledging the old. But what distinguishes an event like the Tehran Book Fair from other international or regional book fairs is its sentimental attachments and the country's rich cultural heritage. Every year, many cultural events in Iran seem to begin with the Tehran Book Fair, and millions of people participate in it. In fact, the entire cultural and artistic currents in Iran are somehow related to this exhibition. It's been said that by showcasing a splendid array of books from all over the globe in this event, in a way, Iran is recalling its role in the Golden Age of Islam, that age of great learning in the 13th century. Consistently, the organizers of Tehran International Book Fair believe that the more a nation can celebrate its great production of books, the more it promotes literacy and an educated public that enriches the republic.
Can you think of a place that can both contain and reveal all existing relations between everything? Simply put, I think that's what can be said of a book fair, particularly of Tehran. The 34th Tehran International Book Fair kicked off in the Iranian capital on May 10th. To take a closer look at what's actually taking place on the ground, please stay with us on this edition of Iran Today.
The 34th Tehran International Book Fair is being held in order to better identify the capacities of Iran's publishing industry, expand cultural relations in the international arena, lay the groundwork for establishing professional communication between Iranian and foreign publishers, and examine problems and solutions for the development of international publishing. The annual Tehran Book Fair, situated at Imam Khomeini's Grand Musalla in Tehran, is an established and friendly event with around 100 foreign publishers, 200 booksellers, and 2,700 domestic publishers and dealers from all over the country active in the virtual and in-person sections. To know more details about the book fair and its stats, we sat for a conversation with Mr. Azad Bakht.
At this time of the book fair, we witnessed a major difference and significant growth. This year, compared to all previous periods, the exhibition has been established in the largest area. In fact, 125,000 square meters of Tehran's Musalla has been allocated to this year's book fair. More than 2,700 publishers have presented their latest titles at the International Book Fair. From this point of view, we can safely claim that Iran is amongst the top three countries in terms of the size of the area amongst the world's exhibitions. The statistics also show that Tehran's 34th International Book Fair ranks first in the world in terms of visitors, which is considered a cultural achievement for the Islamic Republic of Iran.
From the publishers and dealmakers to the copyright pros, the commissioners and the global listeners, including those involved in rights negotiation, the Tehran Book Fair has united the book community for a few days of business, networking and learning. In our visit from the book fair, we had the chance to talk to some publishers. They shared points that are worth listening.
From 2 years ago until today, Haj Qasem Soleimani School Publications has published 18 books on different topics for different age groups. We have books for children, books that narrate parts of the main book named I Was Not Afraid of Anything. This book has been written by Haj Qasem himself before his martyrdom. We have tried to present parts of it in the form of poems for kids. Recently, considering the interest of the teenage audience, both inside and outside the country for comic script books, we presented the book I Was Not Afraid of Anything in the form of comic script, which was very well received, thank God.
Thank God, the book fair has been welcomed very well so far, and it's been very well received. But I need to mention that Amir Kabir Publications has its own customers during the 12 month of the year, and it's not limited to here only. The material we use in our book production, our authors, our translators are all the best, and therefore our market is good. Amir Kabir Publications has been operating since 1949. Amir Kabir Publications is famous in the field of psychology and philosophy, history books, literature and novel books, dictionaries, religious works and others. We are happy to be here at this fair. We have been successful so far.
Kitabistan Marifat Publications has been operating since 2014, and we have been working in the field of publishing and distributing books for almost 8 to 9 years. So far, we have published 220 books in the fields of literature, fiction, psychology, and history. We also work in the field of translation.
The event offers a rich and delicious variety of choice for anyone interested in books, even children. For them, it's usually a new experience that starts with making a choice. What do I want to read? And since being empowered to choose their own books is a milestone opportunity to identify and express their own voice. Kids also leave the book fair as bolder, prouder, and stronger individuals. Thousands of rare items are on offer from all areas of fiction and nonfiction. There are also prices to suit all pockets.
We have various jobs in the publishing industry. One of these jobs is story editing. The difference between a story editor and other editors is that the story editor has a more comprehensive and complete view and at the same time is far away from a series of other issues. For example, the story editor determines the publication rules. I mean the rules related to what books I publish in the field of novels and in what formats and structures and forms. For example, a publisher says that I only publish large books. Another publisher says that I only publish collections of short stories. Another task of the editor is related to the author. That is, it helps the authors who have introduced their books for publication to improve their work. For example, look at this book. When this book was introduced for publication, we showed the author its weak points, fixed them, and boosted its strength points. The editor can also offer topics to the author for writing on behalf of the publisher.
Furthermore, city organizers have worked hard to make sure every other aspect of the visitor's experience is taken care of. For instance, there are a variety of food stalls at the fair open all day, which offer hot and cold food and refreshments. Also, there are a number of easy-to-use parking facilities at the location. For those traveling by the city metro, it can't be any more convenient. There's a metro station located right at the fairground. And for those who wish to make use of the bus service, there are several lines running to and from the book fair location all day long.
A good thing this year was that in the past it was discussed that the Tehran Book Fair, unlike the rest of the world, has a sales section and is not just a book fair. This would cause booksellers to face a decrease in customers and suffer losses. This year, for the first time, bookstores are also allowed to have presence at the Tehran Book Fair and offer the latest books.
The 34th Tehran International Book Fair is underway until May 30th, 2023 at Imam Khomeini's Grand Musalla in Tehran. As you can see, people around me are very busy trying to find out what they're looking for. It is also worth mentioning that this year's event includes an online book fair as well, which means that you can visit the website at www.ketab.ir to purchase the desired books from the convenience of your home. The organizers of the event hope that you will find that little something from the large selections, including rare and antiquarian books, maps, posters, manuscripts, and ephemeral. They've made sure that there will be something that will catch your eye.
More than 1,500 publishers are showcasing their books at the exhibition, while some 1,200 publishers display their books online. The motto for this year's book fair is The Future is Worth Reading.
Another part of our work is finding talented writers from all over Iran. It doesn't matter where the person lives. For example, the author of this book is a woman who lives in Abadan, a city in Iran's southeastern province of Khuzestan. This lady does not live in the capital and is far from the centers of Iran's publishing industry. But the cyberspace has created an opportunity for us to read and publish her book. Maybe if it wasn't for this mechanism, her book would have never been published.
We only do promotion in this booth. We don't sell books at all here. Our promotion task has, in fact, three approaches. First, we display the book of the year, I mean the selected one. Second, in this booth, we display all the selected books of the 15th edition of the Jalal al-Ahmad Award, as well as the 17th edition of Fajj Poetry Festival. This year is our second term, and here we hold meetings and experts exchange ideas about the selected works. Our third activity here is to keep alive the memory of the selected writers who have passed away and are no longer among us.
Literature in Iran has had a significant impact in the development of the country, especially in modern times. In light of that, there are more than a dozen seasonal, annual, and biennial literary awards held in Iran by the country's establishment. These awards have created a good developmental trend and have had significant impacts in promoting new authors and new works and the quality of their works. According to statistics, there are about over 60,000 titles published as first editions in Iran annually. These awards cause a number of these literary works which are worthy to become well known. That increases the author's motivation and the number of published copies. Consequently, these factors lead to the promotion of literature itself. One of those awards is the Jalal al-Ahmad Literary Award, which was approved by the Supreme Council of Cultural Revolution in 2006. The award aims to promote the national religious language and literature through appreciation of the writers of the prominent leading forward-looking works. The topics assessed by the jury include long and short story, literary criticism, documentation, and historiography.
For an author, the first and major challenge is to find a good publisher who can publish his book in a timely manner, because contrary to the general public's opinion, book production is an arduous task. After we finish writing, we face challenges including cover design, editing by the last two people, proofreading, page layout, licensing, paper, interaction with the printer, and other things. In fact, a publisher should be found who can make all these arrangements in a short period of time. The second challenge of the author is actually getting money from the publisher. In fact, because publishers usually work based on long-term contracts, they also face a challenge to pay authors because books are not sold in cash in the Iranian market.
Also, Parvin Etesami Literary Award is another highly regarded award held in 2004 for the first time by the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance. The prize's secretariat arbitrates the books written by women from throughout the country in five branches of research literature, drama, fiction, poetry, and children's literature, including authoring and translation works.
Hajar Publications is specialized in the fields of women and family books. It started its activity as a cultural institution in 2003. Since 2018, we focused on works that are centered on women issues. We receive and publish works that focus on women and family in all related subjects. Our other priorities are children and teenagers. Hopefully, we plan to work in that field as well, and we also review and publish the works of seminary students, whether in Persian or foreign languages.
The purpose of holding this award, in addition to honoring the renowned Iranian lady poet Parvin Etesami, is growth and promotion of women's literary creativities, strengthening Persian language abroad, linking the nation's literature, especially in the Muslim world, introducing the women's literary prominent figures and researchers, and also appreciation of women in the field of Persian language and literature.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media. Welcome to the news section of the program. I have selected three excerpts from three news websites, starting with Financial Tribune. Role of books in promoting countries' culture highlighted. Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, underscored the role of books in the cultivation of Iran's unique culture. Promotion of the country's culture always requires books. Despite the spread of cyberspace, books still hold a preeminent position, Ayatollah Khamenei said during a three-hour visit to the 34th Tehran International Book Fair on Sunday. This was the first time in 3 years that the leader personally paid a visit to the annual book fair post-COVID-19. The leader emphasized the need for the publication of books that target children and adolescents so that there would be no need for foreign books. New York Times says, books ban rising rapidly in the U.S., free speech groups find. A new report from PEN America, the free speech organization, details a new rise of censorship efforts across the United States. Book bans are rising at a rapid pace in school districts around the United States, driven by new laws and regulations that limit what kinds of book children can access, according to a new report from PEN America, a free speech organization. From July to December 2022, Penn found 1,477 cases of books being removed, up from 1,149 during the previous 6 months.
Since the organization began tracking bans in July 2021, it has counted more than 4,000 instances of book removals using new reports, public record requests, and publicly available data. The statistic also fails to capture the rapid evolution of book restrictions into what many free speech organizations consider a worrisome new phase. Book bans are increasingly driven by organized efforts led by elected officials or activist groups whose actions can affect a whole district or state. The debate around what constitutes appropriate reading material for students also became increasingly politicized and vitriolic. Librarians and teachers have been accused of promoting pedophilia, and some have lost their jobs or quit under pressure after refusing to remove books. According to Politico, French economy minister defends literary pursuits after criticism over racy novel. Bruno Le Maire's new novel went for sale just hours before ratings agency Fitch downgraded France's credit rating. A new novel about legendary pianist Vladimir Horowitz has been the subject of much polemic in French political circles in recent days. The reason? It features an erotic scene and was written by France's economy and finance minister Bruno Le Maire. Le Maire's new novel, Fougue Américaine, drew instant criticism and mockery after hitting bookstores last week, including by government opponents who accused the powerful minister of shunning his duties and spending his energy writing literature at a time of economic tension and social unrest. Much of the controversy surrounding the novel focused on an excerpt that went viral, in which the French minister narrates an explicit sex scene, a description that inspired some protesters earlier this week who felt screwed by the government's pensions reform. "Between freedom and censorship, I always chose and I will always choose freedom," Le Maire said, noting that the controversial passage was 10 lines in 480 pages, while the book explores deeper topics such as human feelings and the music of Bach and Beethoven. Well, dear viewers, it's time to get back to our main narrative. Please stay tuned. According to some scholars, Tehran Book Fair is as prestigious as book fairs in Paris, Istanbul, and elsewhere. The cultural event has turned into a landmark, momentous book fair in the West Asia after 34 editions in a row. Millions of visitors inspect the fair every year, including thousands of university students, scholars, and their families. The foreign publishers substantially offer their materials in English or Arabic. However, titles in French, German, Chinese, Korean, or Japanese are also available.
As the leader also mentioned in his speech after his visit from the book fair, efforts have been made to reduce the price of books. We hope that with regard to the measures taken, we will achieve self-sufficiency in paper production in the country by the beginning of the next year. Provisions have been made, new factories are being built, and the production of factories has increased. We think that in the next term of the exhibition, books will be presented at lower prices because the publishers will have access to paper at cheaper prices.
Themes act as an important binding element for a book fair. Some book fairs, mostly the international ones, select a country to be the theme of the fair. For instance, the theme country of the 34th edition of the International Tehran Book Fair is Tajikistan. In international book fairs as such, significant publishing houses from other countries participate, enriching the inclusivity of the experience. A rich panel of great minds from these countries come together for various organized events. Directors of several book fairs, including the Doha International Book Fair, New Delhi World Book Fair, and Muscat International Book Fair, attend the opening ceremony of Tehran's event. In addition, cultural ministers of Tajikistan and Venezuela are in Tehran to participate in several programs. In a press release published by the organizers, Tajik Ambassador Zahedi Nizamuddin Shamsuddin Zadeh called the book fair the largest cultural event in the region, which aims to improve cultural ties by showcasing the latest publications. "We have much in common with Iran on cultural, historical, and religious issues, and the joint cultural and historical values provide the ground for more cultural interactions between the two countries," he said. Also, Tajikistan plans to organize several review sessions and book launch events, including a new Tajik dictionary. In addition, Iranian and Tajik literati will organize a poetry night during the book fair.
Starting in the late 20th century, books and book fairs have had to adjust to what is referred to as human-computer interaction. Books as printed objects still continue to be valuable, even essential in areas that have no access to Wi-Fi. But in the regions that are well served in terms of the web, books can be accessed at extraordinary speed and scope. Therefore, physical books need to offer significant elements such as high quality print, reproduction, and more to compete with their virtual counterparts.
The international section of the book fair aims to introduce Iran's rich publishing industry to an international audience, to enhance cultural exchanges in the global scene, and to lay a groundwork for communication between Iranian and foreign publishers. 30 guests and 27 countries are present in the international section, and in general, about 40 countries will participate in this year's exhibition.
I have this advice for foreign book lovers that they can use the virtual space of the Tehran Book Fair and visit and buy all the books available. Their orders will be delivered for free by post. The fact that they live abroad does not mean that they are far from the exhibition.
Books in multiple languages from different countries across the globe bring people together, ignoring political and linguistic boundaries in these fairs. An amalgamation of art and culture materializes in each of them. A sense of responsibility awakens towards propagating the habit of reading and keeping a tradition with purpose alive. It brings minds and interests together and presents something for everyone here. In that regard, translators play a significant role in the literary scene. And thanks to Iran's love for literature, Tehran bookshops boast a diverse range of foreign titles, spanning everything from Marcel Proust to Haruki Murakami. In fact, according to experts, translators in Iran enjoy a degree of popularity rarely seen in the West. Their names are published on covers alongside the authors, and some are famous cultural figures. But for most, translation is a passion career with little to no financial reward and months spent waiting to obtain permission.
See, there are two types of works. We have authorship and translation. About 50 to 60% of our novels are translations. We analyze the market need and translate and produce books based on our researches. Certainly, our first edition is remarkable in terms of statistics and figures. Our first edition may be less this year compared to previous years, but according to the author and translator, our new publications are also active, and we have prepared about 35 translated book titles that we have presented in the exhibition this year.
However, the popularity of foreign fiction has led to the problem of multiple translations of the same book appearing in the market often at the same time, which could only mean that some translators are exploiting the copyright vacuum and by that creating unethical circumstances that undermines the nature of the industry. Book fairs provide a rare opportunity to address these issues. Utilizing the experience of international participants could help the locals to overcome these challenges. History stands as a witness to Tehran's Grand Festival, which celebrates the art of reading and the sanctity of readers, where as far as the eyes can go, people from all age groups can be seen, children, couples, and students from different walks of life. If you have never been to a book fair yet, it is time that you experience one soon.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Till next time, take care.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Thank you.
visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of iRabi English Radio, Call of Islam page. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashimi Nejad. Please stay tuned. Great men of Allah have revealed some of the secrets of their Salat time. They believe that when we reach the sentence, "You alone do we worship, and to you alone do we turn for help," our full attention must be led to Allah. In better words, you must feel the presence of Allah when saying such sentences. Thus, we must correct our salat because most of the problems that we have in life are rooted in our incorrect understanding about salat. Once Prophet of Islam was passing by and suddenly saw a person who was praying fast. Prophet stated, "You are praying as if a crow is pecking on the ground." Now compare how many of us pray like this in our life. Fast and inattentive salat will get us nowhere. According to Prophet Muhammad, the person who prays fast will not be resurrected as a Muslim on the Day of Judgment. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRab English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Hashim Nejad. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.